Page 371, 372, last line. For this reason is the last line in English, last line in the Hebrew. This chapter, the Alter Rebbe talks about Tshuva Tata, the lower level of Teshuva, and discusses the two different ways of approaching Tshuva Tata. And one is through meditation and the greatness of Hashem, and the second way is through breaking one's heart, through making a master of accounts and going through all a person's deeds. And he goes through specifically all the different things that a person could have done, like he did back in chapter 2 when he mentions all the things about fasting, which I totally don't do about. So then in this last section, which we ran out of time last time, we sure really could have finished this last time, but... So, Lechain, Sidra B'kriya Shema Shalomita, L'kaba Olav Dalav Mises Beistin. You have, it was incorporated into the Kriya Shema, I don't know how long ago, when the Tehillas Hashem Sidurim, the Lubavitcher Sidurim, that was printed in 1956, did not have this Yehi Ratzon in it at all. Really? Later ones had it in the back.
Yeah.
And it was like in very small print. It said, if you want to say this, he wrote something, you have to go to the back of the book.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't until the second edition of the English Siddur came out that it was actually retypeset and it was put in the Kriya Shema right there.
Hmm.
Okay. I don't know if other nuschois say this Yehi Ratzon. So, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. In the Shmalmita?
In the Kriya Shmalmita, yeah. I accept upon myself that I take upon myself to get skila if I did somehow didn't say Kriya Shma properly and with the Pugamis bris. We should let me grab a sitter. It says, we said this right after the Tachanun prayer, in the new annotated sitter, the big blue one, so it's on page 145. It says, may it be your will, Lord our God and God of our fathers, that if I err, sinned, and willfully transgressed before you, and caused a defect in the letter Yud, of your great name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, by neglecting Kriya Shema and the letter Aleph of the name Adonai, and I have incurred the penalty of lapidation.
Yes.
That means stoning.
Yes.
Lapidation, I was thinking of lapis lazuli, yes. And the like in your righteous court, I hereby accept lapidation, and I, as if I have been stoned by means of the letter Aleph of the name Adonai in the great court of Jerusalem for the sake of the glory of your holy name. That's paragraph one. Paragraph two says, if I cause any defect in the hay of your name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, and by neglecting to put on tefillin, I accept upon myself the penalty of burning. The third paragraph says, if I have erred in the defect that will cause the letter of the letter Vav of your name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, by neglecting to do tzitzis, so then I take upon myself the penalty of decapitation.
Right.
And then finally it says, if I have sinned and caused a defect in the last letter of the last letter of the last hey of your great name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, by neglecting to pray properly, I incur upon myself the penalty of strangulation.
Right.
Okay? So now, this is really strange, this whole thing. Because what's the punishment for not saying for saying the Shema properly?
You'll lose a mitzvah.
There's no punishment.
Right, exactly.
You didn't get the positive commandment.
Exactly.
Same thing with every other positive commandment that a person doesn't do.
Yeah. Right.
And he talked about this before, that in the beginning of chapter 2, that he said, for example, in temple times, that if a person felt really bad that they missed saying the Shema in his proper time, so he could bring a korban ola, he could bring a burnt offering, and that would act as an atonement to get him back in good standing, because there's no way, once a person missed the time, he can't make it up by saying it twice tomorrow.
No.
He missed it. And that's it. There's no way to make up for it.
Right.
And it's interesting that of the ones which are discussed over here, it doesn't say, for example, Talmud Torah. Because you might think, if I messed up Talmud Torah, because after all, it does say, Talmud Torah connected kulam.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The way of Torah, the way is equal to all.
Right, right.
But that already, that one doesn't need to be mentioned, because we know of the severity of Talmud Torah already. as they said, he quoted here before, that Hashem could forgive somebody. This is where we ended off on last time. Yeah. Hashem could forgive somebody for idolatry, adultery, and murder before he could forgive somebody for wasting time. So the so we know of the severity of Talmud Torah. So you would think, but Kriya Shema. I said the Shema, I said a couple of minutes late. I said it an hour late. I missed the time for it. Okay? Or for my davening, I wasn't focused in my davening. Mm. And my tzitzis, okay, so my tzitzis got rumpled up a little bit, or whatever it is, how it is that we want to neglect that, or the tefillin, etc.
Yeah.
So the taking upon one's self these punishments seems a bit extreme. And especially, we're talking, this is Chassidus over here, you know. So, okay, in the times of the Gemara. So you have Reb Zera, that one time his tefillin shel rosh strap turned over and he fasted 40 times. Okay, that's for him. That was for then.
Yeah.
Okay, but this was incorporated in the Siddur by the Alter Rebbe.
Right.
And that much meant that the Alter Rebbe wanted us to say it.
Right.
How do we understand it not being an addition to the Torah? I mean, it's like, where it's a severe consequence that wasn't there before.
Right, so it's not going to happen. It's not going to meet you out. Now, just say here that I'm going to go, you know, throw myself off a cliff.
Right.
Okay, or pour molten lead down my throat. That's not what it says. It says, I take it upon myself as though this has happened. Because there's a discussion as to when does a person get credit for not transgressing a commandment. And it's everybody agrees, Shava al tasa ki ila asa. If a person had an opportunity to do something wrong and sat back and didn't do something wrong, so he's given credit as though he did something good. Okay, the other opinion is right now all four of us are not committing murder. Okay, so we're getting the credit. That's one way of looking at it. But here, that a person has the opportunity to do something wrong and doesn't do it, so then it's as though he has done something good and deserves a reward for it. Okay, so like this way, this is like the conversely also here, that we're talking about a positive commandment.
Mm.
Okay, so what happens with a positive commandment? So he didn't make the connection. So what does that mean? That means that there is a blemish in the connection that he has between him and Hashem. Similar to if he had done something wrong. When a person does something wrong, it creates a deficiency in the connection that he has with Hashem. How is it that those deficiencies are corrected? Through the cleansing process that we call the quote-unquote punishments. So here now, this person realizes that it's no simple thing to say Kriya Shema late. It actually is, okay, he said the Kriya Shema, he gets credit for the Shema, but he didn't say it bizmana, he didn't say it at the proper time. So there is a deficiency there. And by taking upon himself to say, listen, it's as though, listen, Hashem, I want you to consider it. I'm prepared, I'm ready, as though you had just thrown me off a cliff. I'm ready. Now, with Hashem, Hashem is not like us, duh, but because Hashem doesn't need the actual to realize the potential. We have a potential, we have an actual, it's two different things.
Right.
And the potential can only be something once it's been actualized.
Right.
With Hashem, Hashem is above time. So potential and actual exist simultaneously. So once it is, and as we've talked about this before, the halakhic ramifications of this. Once a person has said, okay, the potential is there, I'm ready to be stoned. So for Hashem, that's as though they were actually stoned. The effect of saying, I'm prepared, I'm ready to get thrown off a cliff. In Hashem's eyes, that person has been thrown off a cliff. So that makes up then for the deficiency. Because we know Misa Mechaperes, death atones for all sin.
Just by recitation, or does it have
you gotta know what you're saying.
Well, I understand. But even if you know it, if there's no kavana, does it still work the same?
Not really.
Yep. I was going to say. Yeah,
no, you can't just give lip service.
Can't mouth it.
I'm going to think to myself, would I really like say I'm ready to get myself get thrown off a cliff at this point? That's a tough call, God, but...
You're saying it every day, so okay. You're making a pact that when I miss...
No, this is not. This is if I did already.
If I already did...
You can't go forward. It doesn't work that way in Judaism.
So it's not something you say every day. You only say it if you did miss.
That's what it says. It says... If I have erred, sinned, and willfully transgressed. That's past tense.
If I have.
Then I'm ready to...
Wouldn't it be an...
And we're saying this. I said Kriya Shema this morning before sunrise.
It's like you're covering your bases at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It sounds like as any aspect of Shema, as opposed to just the time. Because if you said it during the time, then what you're saying is it doesn't count. But if it has to do with with all aspects of
Okay, that's
of
one
the
aspect
Shema,
of it. So, yeah, so...
Okay, said Kriya Shema before Baruch.
And if that be the case, then any way you say Shema, could you have said Shema better?
Of course.
So, and any way you dive in,
could
you
daven Shema better? That would always apply.
Okay, and then the same thing with one's tzitzis and one's
tefillin. Yeah, of course, yeah.
It could always be done better.
Yeah, of course.
So if we're looking at that, we want to make a connection. So we're saying, listen, Hashem, I'm going to make it such that we're going to fire the retro rockets over here.
Right.
And this will hopefully boost up my connection,
yeah.
Because just as it is Misa Mechaperis V'chol Avon, that death atones for all sin. Mm. So in this instance, it should be that any deficiency that I had when I said the Shema, put on my tefillin, my tzitzis, or davened,
I'm willing to accept this.
Should also be removed.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that this should be removed. Consider it as though my davening was absolutely 100% perfect.
Yeah.
That's what I would like you to do.
But in the physical realm of things, if somebody's really chai misa, they couldn't just say, "Oh, geez,
no." If this prayer doesn't work, but for somebody murdered somebody.
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah.
dear God, I murdered somebody and I'm prepared to get killed. Okay, fine.
After we'll see, they can say
we can see it. We can see what we can do about getting you thrown off a cliff.
Right, but it's equating similar punishments with missing a hay or missing a
yeah. And that's the next thing to talk about.
Okay,
is the letter that our not saying the Shema properly affects the Yud of Hashem's name. Mm. What is that talking about? So he says, Milvatsha Alpi Said. Aside from the fact that according to the Kabbalistic intentions, Hapoygim Ba'is Yud Shel Shem Havaya Ki Ilun Ischayev Biskila, that a person who blemishes the Yud of Hashem's name is as though he was culpable, the death penalty of stoning. And the person who blemishes the hay, the first hay of Hashem's name, as though he has a culpable burning. And for the last two letters of Hashem's name, the Vav and Hey, if he blemished those, so he would be culpable for decapitation or strangling. As we said before, okay, so we said this is here to be as an indication. If this is it for this four, what about the other 244 positive commandments?
Right.
Okay, so it's going to be...
Point is, don't take it light.
It's going to be the same deal.
it's going to
be the same deal. Now, what does it mean then that if a person didn't say Shema properly, that he caused a blemish in the Yud? What does that mean specifically? Okay. So we could say that our mitzvahs, the mitzvahs are called the mitzvahs of Hashem. All the mitzvahs that we do are called the mitzvahs of Hashem. They're not called the mitzvahs of Elohim. They're called the mitzvahs of Hashem. Why? Because every mitzvah is introduced by Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, the Be'er B'nei Yisrael, etc., etc. They're all told over to Moshe using the name Yud Kei Vav Kei.
Right.
So yeah. We call them all the mitzvahs of Hashem.
Uh-huh. Makes sense.
Okay. So the purpose of the mitzvahs is, from Hashem's point of view, is to create a vehicle whereby we can connect to Hashem. Because more than we want to connect to Hashem, Hashem wants us connected to Hashem.
Right.
And so therefore we have the positive commandments there to connect us to Hashem.
Sure.
Wow. Specifically, now we have the Shema. What's the whole idea of Shema? Why do we say the Shema? The Shema is a declaration of our self-abnegation, are willing to accept Hashem as king, whatever Hashem wants. Mm-hmm. We're even ready to die for the cause. That sense of bittul, of humility and nullification before Hashem, that's the same modus operandi of the yud, which represents chachma. Mm-hmm. What's the yud? A yud is just a point.
A point. Mm-hmm.
And chachma is just a potential. It's a kayach. Ma, as we talked about way back in chapter 3.
Yeah.
It is the potential of what can be.
What?
Right. It is the ultimate state of bittul, the ultimate state of selflessness and humility. So what are we trying to achieve? By saying the Shema is to reach the level of the Yud, specifically. You got that? You with me? Shema is an expression of humility. The yud, which represents chachma, is an expression of humility. So we're trying to become a yud by saying the Shema.
So by not saying Shema properly, we're not being humble, we're not being...
We're not achieving that level of...
You're not being bittul to...
Correct.
You're not being
and
bittul.
You're putting a dent in that in the yud, so to speak. Okay, when it comes to tefillin...
Hmm.
So tefillin, the expression the more important part of the tefillin is the shel rosh. Mm-hmm. The shel rosh has a higher sanctity than the shel yad. Like, for example, you can use the strap on your shel yad for your shel rosh.
If you need to. Right.
But you can't use your shel rosh on your shel yad. The expression, why? Because you go up in holiness and you don't go down. So the shel rosh is the higher thing. Mm-hmm. What's the whole deal with the shel rosh? Is hamshachas meichin de gadlus. Is to be able to draw down the level of chachma and bina into our brains so that we are able to cogitate about godliness and spirituality. That's called bina. So the whole purpose of tefillin is to develop our sense of understanding. I didn't say the whole purpose, but a major purpose.
Right.
I am reminded of a story which appears in Herbert Wiener's book, 9½ Mystics. Herbert Wiener was a Reform rabbi from South Orange, New Jersey, who had an identity crisis when he was a young Reform rabbi. And wanted to find out about spirituality because he understood that the Reform movement was vapid and had no spirituality. So he went around in the early 60s visiting 10 people. And he wrote a book about his encounters with these 10 people. And he called it 9½ Mystics. Okay? He met the Satmar Rebbe, he met the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I don't know.
He met Jews.
Yeah, only Jews.
Oh, okay. I thought he met some
yogis. No, only Jews. He met Gershon Scholem, Martin Buber, I think, was also in there.
Really?
I don't know. Martin Buber passed away in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And Gershon Scholem, I think, passed away, I don't know, 64, 67. But, so he met these met these people.
I think he's Lubavitch?
He was not a Lubavitcher the whole time that he was a Reform rabbi.
Right.
No, who was Gershon Scholem?
Gershon Scholem was a person who wrote Kabbalah books in English. Where he wrote about Kabbalah. Every one of his books is treif.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Okay, glatt treif. And all of his students, like Moshe Idel, are also treif. So,
I can't miss his books.
Yeah, so I'm saying this on the record. Yeah. So, and Moshe Idel's students also write books, and they're also treif.
No Ashkacha, no Mesorah?
They're off the wall. They say things that are absolutely 100% not true.
Yeah.
Gershon Scholem writes about his experiences of putting on tefillin at dawn, butt naked.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, because he wanted to experience the spirituality unaffected, like the same way, like if Adam had to put on tefillin in the Garden of Eden, how he would have done it.
Have a good time.
Yeah, really. So,
glot
treif. Anyway, so he wrote there he writes about, it's a very thick, big chapter. He visited the Lubavitcher Rebbe many times. After he retired from being a Reform rabbi at age 65, so then he grew a beard, he put on a hat, he moved to Israel. He passed away last April at the age of 93.
Really?
Yeah. So so he wrote there, he had an audience with the Rebbe.
Yeah.
And it was like, he has several of them, and each one of them was like more than an hour.
Wow.
And one of them, he finished his audience with the Rebbe, and the Olam was davening Shacharis already.
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody was up all night. So he's up all night too. And he had this question about his Yechidus. So he asked an old Chassid. He said, listen, I was with the Rebbe, and I have this question. And the Chassid looked at him and said, do you put on tefillin? And he said, no. So the Chassid grabbed him, rolled up the guy's sleeve, and started putting on tefillin on him. And he said, if you would put on tefillin, you would have the clarity of mind that this question wouldn't be a question. That's what I have no idea who the old Chassid was because he doesn't name him.
Whoa.
Okay?
I love it.
But that is people who put on tefillin. Now, do we have empirical evidence to it? No. There's no way to prove it. But putting on tefillin.
Yes, we do.
Makes a person think clearer than if they didn't put on tefillin.
How many Nobel Peace Prize winners or Nobel winners are there among Jews?
Oh, you tons.
Know. How about the rest of the world?
But they don't put on tefillin.
That's true. Most of those don't. But the point is that how many inventors and how many
you're disproving my point.
I know.
it's not disproving it.
I didn't say that they're stupid. I said that they will think clearer.
Yes.
Spiritually.
Yeah, you'll have definitely a greater thing. So that's, that cognizance corresponds to Bina.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay, to understanding.
Okay.
Then you have the tzitzis. Okay?
Yes.
Which the point of the tzitzis, and in discussing the tzitzis, which the tzitzis correspond to the vav, specifically with the emotions. Mm-hmm. Your talis, both your talis katan and your talis gadol, have to cover, in order to be kosher, that you should be able to say a bracha on them, have to cover the majority of your torso. Right. Which the torso is the place of your emotion. In addition to that, the whole thing that Tzemach Tzedek writes in Derech Mitzvei Secha and Shorash Mitzvah Tzitzis, the mitzvah of, not sure, Mitzvah Tzitzis, writes that the whole deal, whether tzitzis are akin to like hair. The hair are hollow. Hair is hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And there is life that passes through it, mm-hmm. some kind of energy, whatever, that's why it grows, a very little bit. So what do tzitzis do? Tzitzis are able to draw from the makif, which is the talus, this encompassing, or the light which is encompassing, and draw it down into panemius in a way similar to like the channels of hair.
Mm.
Okay, so that's the effect of what a vav does. What does a vav do? The vav connects the intellect to action through the emotions, and there's a drawing down. It's a pipeline through the emotions.
Mm.
So that's why the vav. Okay, and then prayer. What's prayer? Prayer is the first three are rabbinic. Are midaraisa.
Right.
As we call tefillah. Well, there is something tefillah midaraisa. That davening, according to the Torah, is midaraisa. Is if you need something, ask.
Yeah.
Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? Okay. Fine. Good. If it's a fine outlet for prayer. Okay. First, she did it wrong though. As first, you're supposed to say, "God, you're really great."
Yes.
Buy me a Mercedes Benz. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
Okay, that's the prescription that you have to do it.
Yes.
So, but I was always under the impression that when it said tefillah over here, that it meant our daily prayers, which are rabbinic by nature. Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of the davening? The purpose of the davening is, first of all, it's done with our mouths, which mouth, it says in Pasach Eliyahu that we say on Friday afternoon, it says that the hey achrena peh tersha bal peh, the last hey corresponds to the mouth there, and that it's an absolute concrete way of relating directly to Hashem. Is her davening. As the Baal Shem Tov says, and we've talked about this many times, the Baal Shem Tov puts such an emphasis on prayer that it's the way for a person to refine their animal soul. And so it has the most of all of these, the commandments, so it's prayer is able to accomplish the most with our persona than these other three. So it's like concrete. That's what the last hey is, malchus, bottom line. And so therefore, he says, so this is all part of tshuva tata. It's a desire, realization. Because what is, if you could relate tshuva tata, we're going back to that. If I could relate tshuva tata, what is tshuva tata? Tshuva tata, the lower level of tshuva means, I'm not where I'm supposed to be in my relationship with Hashem.
Yeah.
I want to get back in good. That's the lower level of tshuva. And there we can take the word tshuva to literally mean to come back. I want to come back to where I'm supposed to be. And this is on the bottom level. And he says, and then he said at the end over here, how he ends this thing, if this is the way it is with these four commandments, so it's for sure that way with all the other 248 positive commandments. And he says, of course, the Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Because, the explained in chapter 5, the importance of studying Torah, and what happens when a person studies Torah, that they have a mitzvah, and they have yediyas of Torah, they have comprehension of Torah, and just the mitzvah of studying itself, there's all kinds of things going on. The person is enveloped by the Torah, the person envelops the Torah. There's all kinds of things happening with the study of Torah, and that's why the Mishnah says, V'talmud Torah keneged kulam. So, yeah, so if it is that a person is, for some reason, wasting time or not studying the way they're supposed to be studying, so that then the Alter Rebbe infers, we can infer from the words of the Alter Rebbe, that's going to cause the greatest defect of them. So how much Torah does that person have to study? All of it. When? All the time. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so that then ends chapter 7. Start chapter 8. After a person has really concentrated, focused on all the things that we said in chapter 7 about the lower level of tshuva, he is now able to request in earnest, in absolute truth, from the depth of his heart, this statement, which is a verse from Tillim, that with your great mercy, erase my negligences, erase my transgressions. Okay, because otherwise, we say that, I say that Tillim at least, it's in chapter 51. So we say it every single day by Kriya Shema Almita. I say it at least once a month when I'm saying Tillim. You know, so it comes up. But when I'm saying Tillim, so there's an expression in English. Oh, it's like saying Tillim, meaning it's just like running through it. This is the expression.
Said my sins before me always, and the same.
No, of the Chatasi Negdi Samid. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and
close.
Yeah, and. So, in order for this to actually happen, that I can actually get Hashem to erase my negligences and my transgressions, I have to really think what is it exactly that I'm talking about. We have an Ahav Torah a couple of weeks ago where Yoshua Kohen Gadol is told to take off his filthy clothes. Mm. And there Chassidus explains it. So the pshat is that his kids were married to shiksas and he had to give them a divorce. But Chassidus explains that it refers to one's thought, speech, and action as being filthy garments. Mm. And he had to get rid of the schmutz from his own persona. So this person now, if he's coming to Hashem and he's got schmutzig garments on, so how's it going to help? The person, I don't want to discourage anybody and think, oh man, I'm going home. That's why I said, don't do anything until we get done with all 12 chapters.
Exactly.
Okay? Now, this is, you know, it's easier for me to understand why when we're learning in chapter 3 about the hundreds of fasts that you have to fast.
Right.
And I say, don't do anything until we get done. Okay, fine, good. Now I don't have to fast all those hundreds of fasts. So here also, I'm saying, don't do anything until we get done with chapter 12 because he kind of like does an end run around this one too.
Right.
Okay, because a person can't, you know, love me even though I'm schmutzig.
Mm.
It's a nice idea, but
oops.
Okay, if your kid comes in from playing and he's covered in mud, you're not going to go run and give him a hug.
Probably not.
Ki azai, gotta clean up first.
After.
Ki azai tik v'beliba be'emes goydel rachmanes al b'chinas alakusha b'nafsa shalamayla kenal. Because what happens now is he's at this point, once he's done chapter 7, how is he relating to Hashem? He's relating to Hashem, godly soul to God. The adjective in godly soul, godly, relates very well to the noun God. And he says it's the second time in two lines that he used the word be'emes. The Alter Rebbe wrote Egeres HaTshuva as part of Tanya. In the same style, in the same kavana.
Quality, right.
That there's no extra words in Egeres HaTshuva either. And that he wrote be'emes me'umka deliba be'emes godel rachmanes. So there it says, if you're going to relate to Hashem with your level of truth, then Hashem will relate back to us with Hashem's level of truth.
That's huge.
Yeah. So, but you can't fool yourself.
No.
It has to be the person has to really go through chapter 7.
Sure.
And has to do the two prescriptions over there.
Yeah, can't play.
Okay? Is it hard? No. Nothing in the Tanya is hard. The whole Tanya is based on Kikar Valecha Hadavar Ma'od. It's very easy.
Yeah.
You just lasso to do it. You just, you know, nothing is stopping us except our desire to do it. It's basically the line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You have to, and it's like Avraham Lipsky used to say, it's not enough to want to, you have to want to want to.
Yeah.
Okay? We could say I want to, but you really don't really want to do it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
As it's easier just to stay in our schmutz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's our comfortable.
It's very comfortable. Okay. Shalamayla kinal, and that to be able to relate to Hashem. That here we see what is the lower level of teshuva, is to relate to Hashem in a total expression of our own personal spirituality. That I'm going to relate to Hashem because of the godliness within me. And that's what's getting close to Hashem. What could get close to Hashem? The only thing that gets close to Hashem is Hashem. And it just so happens, by the way, through divine providence, that we have a portion of Hashem within us.
Yeah.
How do you like that? How convenient.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to get us, propel us closer to Hashem. And with this now, what happens is, once a person stops, Hashem is a real, pardon me for saying it, I know it's some place I'm going to catch it, but Hashem's a softie and is a really a sucker if you make a good deal. Okay.
Yeah.
Hashem just said, as soon as someone says, please Hashem, I mean it this time, Hashem says, okay, fine, good. Okay. At what level are we talking about? It says that he is arousing the Rachmanis from the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim. Okay, Yud Gimel HaRachamim, we know that Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachman, V'chan, and Erchapayim, Rav Hasid, Rav Hasid, Rav Hasid, Rav Hasid, Rav Hasid, yeah, okay. So, those are familiar to all. But where, I think we must have talked about Yud Gimel HaRachamim somewhere in time in the past. What is Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim? Yud Gimel HaRachamim are different levels of compassion, different levels of Rachmanis, of which as it's found in Kesser, in Divine Ratzin. So you have these 13 different levels of Rachmanis, which is found in Kesser. Now let's put that into normal terminology. Hashem wants to forgive us. There's all this mercy that is expressed in Hashem's desires.
Absolutely.
So Hashem wants to have the mercy on us. Okay, now, the mitzvahs are an expression of Hashem's desire. Why do we do any mitzvah? Hashem wants us to. Simple as that.
Yeah.
That's why it's a mitzvah.
That's it.
The Yud Gimel Midas of Rachamim are on a higher level of Hashem's desire. The mitzvahs, believe it or not, are only an external expression in this paradigm, of a God's will.
Yeah.
Yud Gimel Midas of Rachamim are an inner expression of Hashem's desire. So, in order, because it makes sense, in order to counteract the effects of transgressing any of the commandments, sure, and creating a defect,
right,
you're going to need a higher, higher source,
right,
to be able to fill in the gaps,
right,
to correct the blemishes.
Yeah.
And so we're appealing then, or we're trying to tap into this higher level of teshuva. How do you do that? It comes from emes, because one of the 13 attributes of faith, by the way, happens to be emes. And about emes, so it says that when Moshe saw the emes, he fell on his face. He couldn't even take it. Okay, he saw emes and said, "Nah, it's too much for me." Okay,
not relating.
You know the story? Did I ever tell you the story about the man who was looking for truth? Ever hear the story?
No,
ever tell you the story?
No.
Man's looking for truth. This is not Prometheus.
Good.
And he is finding fallacy. Wherever he turns, he's realizing that more and more the world is fallacious. There is no truth in the world.
Right.
Things are not what they appear to be. Everything is upside down and inside out. So he's walking through the woods, and he's really bummed. And he sees through the woods, he sees a light. And as he's walking towards the light, it's getting more and more intense. He finally comes to a clearing, and there's a huge house. And there's this tremendous illumination emitting from this house. So he goes up, and he goes up on the porch, he looks in the window, and he sees there's like the room he's looking at is full of candles. So he knocks on the door, no answer. He walks in the place. Everywhere he's walking through, everywhere he looks, there's candles. There's candles on the floor, there's candles on tables, there's candles on shelves. Every square inch of this place has got some kind of candles. Big candles, middle candles, little candles. Candles all over the place. He's walking around, and he comes into like this little nook, and he gets startled. There's an old man there. "Hey, what are you doing here?" Okay. Guy says, "I'm looking for the truth." The old man says, "Ah, you're looking for the truth? This is the place. This is where the truth is." So he says, "What is this place?" So he says, "These candles represent a person's life on this earth. This big, huge candle over there, that's a newborn baby. These middle-sized ones, those people are older. That one that just went out, I'm sorry to say, that guy just died." So the man is just like totally and completely, totally taken aback. This is like, wow, this is awesome. And then he says to the old man, "Can I see my candle?" The guy said, "No." He says, "Why not?" He says, "You don't want to see your candle. Nobody wants to see their candle." I have worked in this building many years, and I don't want to see my candle.
Right.
Since I'm looking for truth, I can take it. I want to see truth. I want to see my candle. So he said, okay. So he says, what's your name? What year were you born? Takes out this huge book, looks it up, flips through it, says, I hear you are. Fourth floor, third room, second column, fourth shelf on the right. Okay, takes him up the stairs, up to the back of the building over there, takes him into this room, and points at a shelf and says, that's your candle. And it's a wick with no oil. And the guy, the old man walks out, and this guy is just flabbergasted. What do I do? What? I can't. It's like, it's like you don't even know what to do.
Right.
Okay, so he says, okay, compose yourself. So he looks around, and he sees right there in the same room, there's this huge candle. This must be a newborn baby who's going to live 100 years. Okay, so he's thinking to himself, I'll take some of the oil out of the candle, and I'll put it in my candle. And who's going to know? And he says, no, you can't do that. That's not right. You're taking it from somebody else. He says, but I'm going to die. He's going back and forth. Finally says, okay, I got to do it. Okay, he's looking around. What am I, how am I going to do it? He found a spoon. So he takes the spoon. At this point, you hear like the timpanis in the background going boom, 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 like the blood is rushing in his ear. His hand is shaking as he's about to dip the spoon into the candle, into the oil. And suddenly the old man comes back and says, stop! Are you looking for the truth? Or are you looking for the truth you way, the way you want the truth to be? So,
there you go.
Most people, when confronted with truth, go, oh man, no, it's not, I'm not there. And it's to be understood. Okay? We have this expression, that we don't have this expression, but somebody has the expression, the truth will the truth will set you free.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But it's not. Most people, when they're going to confront themselves and understand, who am I? What am I? You know, it's just like the, I'm sending out in the e-parsha this week, so there's a young man had a yechidus with the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. And it was before he was going to go out on Merkez Shlichus and talk about people about buying books and doing Jewish things. And the Friedrich Rebbe said to him, there are large letters in the Torah and there are small letters in the Torah. And that's how you have to look at people differently than you look at yourself. When you look at everybody else, you should see large letters, see the good qualities. When you look at yourself, you should see the small letters. You should see your deficiencies. Okay? The Rebbe, I believe, I'm not exactly sure, but the Sicha, not that he negated that, but let's just say he annotated that. Because when a person's doing Kriya Shema Al Mita at night, Kriya Shema Al Mita, the person's supposed to take an account. What did I do today? And if I blemish this, and if I blemish that, and I milk this up, and I did this wrong, and this, I could have done this better. But somewhere in there, you also have to include, I did this right.
Yeah.
Because you can't just beat yourself up. Because you're never going to get anywhere. Because no matter what you did, you could have always done it better. There's always that possibility. And it's true that even at the end of the Kriya Shema, when you're all done and you said, Biyadcha Afkidruch, etc., and at that point you think to yourself, man, tomorrow's got to be a better day. But you have to include in that as well all the positive things.
Mm-hmm.
A person just can't go around beating themselves up. They have to understand, I have good things too that I've been able to do. And you know what? I'm going to focus on those things, and those the good will be better. Not only is it that the bad has to be good, the good has to be better.
Correct.
Without driving yourself neurotic, to say, okay, I was better, now make it best, because there is no such thing.
There's no best. There's just better.
Best is what you were able to do today, but tomorrow it's got to be better.
Yeah.
So you never get the best. Yeah, that's best. That, you know, no best. That neurosis that we have is not going to go away so easy.
Yeah,
yeah, so it's not going to go away just because you want it to. We're still, it's still going to be there.
Yeah.
So he says, so we are at that point by drawing upon this compassion and really making a truthful account and ascertaining as to who the person, who this individual, he himself is, arouses the supreme levels of compassion, hanim shachas merotzen ha'elyon baruch hu, which is alluded to, which is drawn from the will of Hashem, hanirmas b'kaitse shol yud, shalamay lamay l'chinisa hashpas n'yishpas ma'isi Hashem avaya. And where is, because now he puts it into graphic terms, where is the forgiveness coming from? On the top of the yud, there's a little, a kites means a thorn.
No.
A little chick on the top left part.
Right.
Okay, that just points up. It's just like a point that points up.
Mm.
Okay? That little alludes to Keser, which is above Chachma. Where is it that the Shema, the Tefillah, the Tefillah, the Tzitzis, and the davening connect to the yud, the hay, above and the hay? Where's the compassion to fill in the gaps coming from? From above all that. And that's what we're looking to try and tap into.
Right.
That's what it means to come back to. V'lachin hayud gimel midas harachamim menachim kol habigamim. That's why it is that the 13 attributes of faith cleanse all blemishes. As it says right there in the 13 attributes, that he bears all sin and iniquity, venake, and cleanses, wipes it away. Okay, so that if a person is in that frame of mind where they want to have this relationship to Hashem, and they're willing to work on the relationship, it's very simple. The relationship that a person has with Hashem is the relationship that they want to have with Hashem.
Yeah, that's it.
The hard part is that, it's like the Sperlizeta said, what do you want from us? You put the Yetzer Tov in a book. And you put the Yetzer Hara in our heart.
Right, there you go.
If it would be, so what happens is we read about all the good things we should be doing, and in the meantime, the Yetzer Hara is saying, forget about it.
Yeah.
Come this way.
Yeah.
If it would be that you would put the Yetzer Hara in a book, and we'd be reading these stories about all these horrible things that we could be doing, and our Yetzer Tov was in our heart, and it would say, nah, don't do that. That's ridiculous. You don't want to do that. That would make life, that would make sense then. But you, Hashem, the whole reason why we mess up, it's your fault. You're the one who did it. And we've talked about this before also. That Hashem is the one who's actually facilitating your ability to muck up. Because, like, for example, right now, do we have the, we're told, Kol b'dei shemayim chutz me'yirat shemayim. Everything's in the hands of heaven except for fear of heaven. Meaning we have the choice if we're going to do something bad or good. Right this minute, do you have an opportunity to transgress the mitzvah of eating pork?
No. Hope not.
There is no pork in this house. Okay? And why is that? That's divine providence.
Indeed.
Hashem has made it such that there is no pork here for you to eat. So therefore, you don't have the freedom of choice to eat pork right now or not.
Right.
It's divine providence. Hashem has decided he's not eating pork right now.
But if you want it, you can...
Hey, you want to go, do you pick yourself up, you go over to the market across the street and buy a ham sandwich. Yes, that you would have to do because that's where it is. Okay, but right this second in this house, you do not have the freedom of choice to eat pork. It's
right.
Not available.
Right.
So that means that any sin that a person does do is because Hashem facilitated that it should happen.
Made it available.
And that's when we can exercise our freedom of choice. That's what we said at the onset. That if a person sat back and didn't do something wrong, is considered as having done something because Hashem sticking it right in front of his nose. And what is not only that, is Hashem sticking it right in front of his nose, his Yetzer Hara is saying, ooh, that would be really awesome if we did that. Mm-hmm. And now he's got to deal with that on top of it.
Right.
Okay, so so
we're not going to stack the deck or anything.
Yeah, so it's now, and then what happens is we're told, yeah, and if you don't, Hashem goes, yeah, that's my boy. That's terrific.
Yeah.
You know, the analogy of the king who hires a prostitute to seduce his son.
Right.
Hello?
Yeah.
What kind of king is this?
A very good king.
No. And the prostitute can't even do it. She has to go hire some other girl because she knows that she's not supposed to seduce this kid.
Yeah.
Okay. You need your mouth washed out.
Yes, sir.
Anyway.
Okay.
Go right to the soap and swallow some dishwashing detergent.
All right, good.
Yeah. Okay. V'shuv ein yanika lechitzayim v'asitra achana. This is the clincher. This is the good part. Okay. Because once a person directs their energies to Hashem, We said it's a couple of times. He said it here. He said it boy initially back in chapter 6. The forces of evil are here because we put them here. They're klippa. They're just shells. They're ungeblas and they're full of air. Mm-hmm. Who filled them up with air? We filled them up with air. Mm-hmm. If you do this now, what happens is... we let all the air out and there's nothing there. Okay, there's no longer any nurture to the extraneous forces and the forces of evil, mahashpos hei tata kanal, which has been sunk into exile through our deeds. And since it is that we've been talking about since chapter 4 that Yaakov chavel nachalosoi, that the connection that we have with Hashem is like a rope. And when we go down, we schlep the divine presence in with us into the muck. So like this, what's happening is we're pushing the rope up. And so we're pulling Hashem out. There's no nurture going to the forces of evil. What happens when something doesn't have any nurture?
It dies.
It dies. That's all it takes. Don't you love it when people just say "just"? You know, this is just what you got to do.
That's all you got to do.
Ubezet tashuv hei tatalim im kaimalis yachid beyud keva vidal. And this now we have the expression when he said tshuva at the beginning of chapter 4. He says, "What's tshuva? Tshuva is tashuv hei, returning the hay." Now you know what it means to return the hay, to be united with the yud, the vav, the yud, the hay, and the vav. Vidal, and it suffices for those who understand. And this is where we'll leave off. We were left off with at the end of the parenthesis on page 374 to be continued.